You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network. This is Enterprise Radio and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and top executives who have experienced great success, as well as the sharing of their latest creations, products, and or services that can help you build your business, leading to business success. Today, we are speaking with Gavin Freeman, CEO of the Business Olympian. From a background in elite sport and professional business, Gavin and his team provide executives with the skills to create high-performing teams who can work and deliver consistently under pressure. Gavin, certainly a privilege to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Hey, thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, the pleasure is certainly ours as well, Gavin. So you've worked with some of the best athletes in the world and more recently with senior executives. What do you perceive as the difference between good and great?
Yeah, it's one of these fascinating questions because it's one that comes up all too often when we're trying to really understand that upper echelon. Really, what is that difference when we define somebody as being good and great? And all too often, we define the differences from a skill-based perspective. So we consider what the skills are of an individual and how well they can perform those skills. We tend to look at it very differently. And our perception is that the true difference between good and great is not actually your skill-based, because we believe once you've learned a skill, it's learned. It's actually the ability to perform consistently under pressure. And that, I think, is the important element. It's that, can you actually perform the skill when you're placed in a pressured environment, whether that's the pressure from the economy, or it's simply an internal pressure from your business, or it may even be an individual pressure that you might be experiencing yourself, which nobody else knows about, yet you still have to perform at a given time and on a given day.
Of course, that seems to be at odds with a number of high-profile business authors who often claim it is a skill that can be simply learned. Comment on that, if you would.
Yeah, look, and there is some element to truth in that. You do have to learn the skill, and that's what our education system is about, where we can actually educate people on how to do certain things. The problem and the challenges that we often face in that environment is that learning is done through instructional-based learning, whereby we're given an instruction and we'll learn to then deliver on that piece of information. So whether that being, you know, a lawyer or a doctor, they learn the instruction of what they have to do. The challenge comes into play is when we're talking about human beings and the way they operate in, is that they operate in an experiential world. We don't know what the opposition is going to do. So what we have to be able to do is actually learn how to deliver those skills in an experiential setting. So, you know, we've moved a long way down that path in looking at how do we actually create live-based simulations to enable individuals to practice what they have learned, what they think they've learned, but in a simulated or, dare I say, even a real-based environment, which really tests them and lets them see what they're really made of, as opposed to what they can either regurgitate in an exam or provide commentary on when there isn't that pressure around. We know under pressure, often common sense goes out the window and other factors leave us, and so it's really that environment where it is experiential. We don't know what's coming next. It's not planned, where we have to be able to react. You know, you want the best surgeons out there to be able to respond irrespective to what happens to you in surgery. You don't want them just following the book and saying, I've got to do X and then Y.
As a leader, how would one start building a high-performing team?
Yeah, there's a couple of places to start. The first thing we've got to realize is that work is only a part of an individual's time. And it's a big part. And if you think from, you know, maybe from, I don't know, 20 through to 55, you know, we spend a lot of our time at work. But there's other parts to what we do. And I think the important part of a leader building a team is A, recognizing that their individuals bring more than just their ability to work. There's a head and a heart component. We need to understand the belief systems of our people, and we need to make sure that those belief systems are aligned to our belief system and to our organizational belief system so that we can actually build the discretionary effort. Because if we're going to build a high-performing team, we have to have discretionary effort. And then the question is, where does discretionary effort come from? And that ultimately comes from what drives us, and you know, that's our motivation.
Certainly an interesting response. Get into that further, if you would.
Well, you know, it's trying to understand what motivation actually is. And, you know, we've looked at the literature over the years, and we've seen everything from, you know, back in the caveman days where our motivation was to stay alive, and so we did what we needed to do. And then later on, Maslow came around with his hierarchy of needs and understood that we needed to have met certain criteria before other things could happen. We then moved a bit more in our thinking, and we started seeing motivation more being driven by punishment and versus reward. So if I rewarded you, you did something more often, and if I punished you, you did it less frequently. We've moved beyond that a little bit more now, and we now start to look at motivation from an intrinsic and extrinsic perspective. You know, what drives me can come from an intrinsic factor or an extrinsic. I actually think that motivation goes a little bit further, and I think we need to look at motivation from a completely different perspective and understand the variables that actually impact on an individual's own personal motivation.
Certainly appreciate that further explanation there. Today we're joined by Gavin Freeman, CEO of the Business Olympian. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Gavin, so is motivation like a switch on or off? How would you explain that?
You know, back in the day when we thought of motivation, you know, when I was sort of going to the last answer was looking at motivation down a particular pathway. We look at motivation in a very different way. We think of it as a continuum. And we look at the continuum not being whether it's a reward or a punishment element, or whether it's an intrinsic or an extrinsic element, but we actually look at our continuum and we define it across two variables. We're either motivated to succeed or we're motivated to avoid failure. Now, what's fascinating about the continuum is that you and I and everybody else out there, we are always on that continuum. And it just depends on the context that we're in and in what we're trying to deliver as to where we sit on that continuum. So let me give you an example. Many people, when you ask them, you know, what they're scared of the most, will often refer to public speaking as something that they're petrified of. In fact, much research tells us that people would rather die than have to speak in front of a public. So if we think of public speaking on our motivational continuum, one could argue that many people sit on the motivated to avoid failure side of the continuum. That is, they don't like public speaking because they're concerned about the negative evaluation of themselves, by themselves, or by others. However, every one of those individuals are most likely very comfortable giving a presentation, let's call it that, say to their family members, to have a conversation at dinner, to present an idea, you know, to their extended family at a birthday party. So in that context, the presentation, they would shift across that continuum to being motivated to succeed. They're trying to get a message across. And dare I say, if the family maybe didn't like what they're offering, they wouldn't necessarily see that failure as a negative sense. So in the corporate world, that context plays out exactly the same way. You may feel very comfortable speaking to your colleagues within your department, but when the CEO calls you and says, I'd like you to come and present to the board on a particular topic, you may now shift across this continuum into being more motivated to avoid failure rather than being motivated to succeed. The challenge comes in is that we don't know where on the continuum an individual is. So you may be very much motivated to avoid failure, yet still look like you're succeeding to the external eye, because you're still being driven to succeed. It's the internal drivers. And so where this becomes more fascinating is when we think about how organizations reward people. And it's a really good example, because generally we think that if I reward somebody, then the likelihood is they will continue to do that again, whether it be a bottle of wine or maybe free tickets to a movie. It doesn't have to be monetary. It can be just an acknowledgement of a reward. Now, what's interesting is if an individual in that environment, let's say, for example, happens to be incredibly motivated to avoid failure, and they're provided with a reward, the unfortunate outcome could be that that individual actually decreases their effort and their intensity because they're scared of failing into the future. They've just been rewarded for doing something in the here and now. And unfortunately, the mindset shifts to thinking, I better not stuff up into the future. And so often, you may actually see that what you're thinking as being a positive reward system up front turns into a negative outcome. But that's because of the context of what that that individual is facing. So we know when we're motivated to avoid failure and we perceive failure, we see a few things happening. We see a decrease in effort and intensity. We see an increase in blaming, justifying, defending, and denying. And the reason for that is so that we can protect our ego. If I've put all those things in place, I can protect my ego. For anybody out there who's been to a university exam or a school exam, may recall the friend who, as walking into the exam, said to you, I haven't studied for this one. And what they're telling you is they're putting the excuse in place prior to them receiving their results. And so if they did poorly, they've already got their built-in excuse. I told you I didn't work well. However, if they succeed, what they then turn around and say is, I'm an absolute genius. See how well I've done. So we see this playing out. On the flip side, when we're motivated to succeed, we simply see failure as a stepping stone to future success. So any form of failure that gets presented to us is interpreted in a way of saying, how can I use this to further enhance where and what I'm trying to achieve? And so in this mindset, we see a different form of characteristic starting to form when we see failure. We see an increase in effort. We see an increase in intensity. We see an ownership of error taking place, which we do not see in the motivation to avoid failure mindset, whereby the individual put their hand up and say, yes, I've made a mistake, and here's what I'm going to do about it. So we see this absolute change happening, and this continuum now allows us to actually see where an individual is and work with them independently to enable them to be more successful going forward.
Certainly a load of information, excellent point of view. Now, lastly, if you're stuck in the motivation to avoid failure mindset, you mentioned that earlier, how do you move to the other side?
Oh, look, and that's where that's the $64,000 question half the time, because the first thing we need to realize is that we need to redefine failure. Unfortunately, throughout our history, we're often taught that failing is bad and that we can't view failure in a positive sense. So the first step is to actually recognize that we can redefine failure and we can look at it from an absolute positive perspective. You know, there are some wonderful anecdotes out there, and the one that I always use is a quote that's attributed to Michael Jordan, in which case he refers to the amount of shots he's missed and the amount of games he's lost, and it's he's failed over and over again, and that's why he succeeds. And we do see it in the sporting world significantly more than in the corporate world, that failure is seen as a stepping stone to success. We only have to look as far as WD-40, which is an oil-based product, based here. We have it here on the other side of the world in Australia, but I'm sure there's equivalents around the world. Now, what's interesting about the WD-40 is that there used to be a WD-39 and 38 and 37, and the reason why they called it WD-40 is because it was the 40th failure that was a success, and they've used that to then name the product. There are countless examples out there where there have been multiple failures, but because of the mindset that is, we need to redefine this, has enabled them to turn that into a success. So that's part one. Part two is, once you've defined it and you've redefined it, is you need to recognize what your signs and symptoms are when you're slipping into that. Now, we're all different, and that's where a bit of self-recognition, a bit of self-insight comes into play. And the best way around that is, once you've identified it, write it down, and then let's go back to the good old chestnut of setting some goals. We really need to be focused on absolutely setting our goals of what we're trying to achieve and making sure that everything we do leads towards that success. What we've got to stop doing is redefining our failures by the moment in time and actually look to the bigger picture. Let's look 1, 2, 3, 5 years ahead and consider that the steps we take now will enable us to be successful in the future. And sometimes we just need to realize that we will fail in the short term, but it's the long term that matters.
You're hitting on all cylinders. Thank you so much for your point of view. It's certainly inspiring and insightful. Certainly good stuff for our listeners. How about telling our folks where they can find you online and how they connect with you as well?
Look, I'm more than welcome to. They can head over to my website, which is www.businessolympian.com. Or they can go to my personal speaking site, which is www.gavinfreeman.com. You can get me on Twitter at BizOlympian, B-U-S, and then the word Olympian, or just search on LinkedIn, and it shouldn't be too hard to find me there.
Well, Gavin, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly wish you all the best.
Thanks very much, mate. Take care.
We've been speaking with Gavin Freeman, CEO of the Business Olympian. From a background in elite sport and professional business, Gavin and his team provide executives with the skills to create high-performing teams who can work and deliver consistently under pressure. And once again, the websites of reference is businessolympian.com as well as gavinfreeman.com. And this is Eric Dye. You've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.